This is sports photographer Brad Mangin, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy!
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 42. How do you feel about giving away photography? In this episode, Missouri professor Melissa Click is charged with assaulting a student, and we have the student's thoughts on this. A 22-year-old photographer creates quite a stir. The Fujifilm medium format camera is rumored to be in active development now. Adobe portfolio launches. Broadcaster Keith Olbermann's photos were a swing and a miss. And a photojournalist is mugged in France. All that and more in episode 42 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much for opening the show, Brad. I greatly appreciate it. For those of you who don't know, Brad Mangin is a freelance sports photographer based in the San Francisco Bay Area and is one of the founders of the SportsShooter.com community website. He's shot for Sports Illustrated, Major League Baseball, and many other clients with coveted assignments like the Olympic Games, the World Series, and other top events in the world of sports. When you need the job done and you need it done right, Brad Mangin is the man you call. As a former photojournalist and sports photographer myself, I'm honored that one of my favorite photographers, and I'm talking about Brad right here, of course, opened this show for us. If you want to know what top-shelf sports photography looks like, head on over to Brad's website at manginphotography.com. That's M-A-N-G-I-N photography.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 42 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends as well. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. You may recall we reported on University of Missouri professor Melissa Click. She went all Napoleon on some student journalists there, trying to keep them from covering a student protest, an action which caused her to make worldwide news. Who does she think she is? She's a university professor. Well, not for long, I suspect. Reason being that she was charged for assault on Monday, January 25th, 2016, for her now infamous actions last November 9th, 2015. It's not at all good for one's career to assault anyone, let alone a student, and on camera, no less. In my opinion, her days there at the university are numbered. Lawmakers there in Missouri called for her ouster, and surprisingly, that is yet to happen. It's a stain on the university's reputation, a university with a storied, amazing journalism program, and a professor associated with that journalism and their mass media programs should know better. She should have stood up for those student journalists, not inflamed the situation, and helped trample on their First Amendment rights. That just blows my mind. How is she not gone already? Now, the university's interim chancellor, Hank Foley, spoke out this week, saying that he doesn't plan on firing Professor Click right now, and saying that the university, quote, must allow due process to play out, end quote. Well, I reached out once again to Mark Scheirbecker, the student journalist who stood up to Professor Click, defended the First Amendment, and recorded the events as they unfolded that day to get his thoughts on Click being charged. After all, it was he that Click assaulted on that day. And here's what Mark had to say.
I want to walk you back through what I saw happen in November when I recorded my video, and of course when University of Missouri System President Timothy Wolf resigned. That morning, Tim Wolf resigned, and I was about a block away from the main protest site when I heard the cheer go up, and I knew that he had resigned. At that point, I headed over there with Jesse and Chenshin, recording this for posterity and observing what was going on. I started to see that relations between the concerned student body and the media were deteriorating very rapidly. The tipping point was when I saw a professor strike out at a cameraman who was attempting to interview one of the concerned student members. At this point, there really was no resolving our differences. So this is when you started to see that concerned student were motioning to end their relationship with the media and to kick them off of the quad. As an independent journalist, the best tool I had on me at the time was my camera, which I, of course, used to document what I saw was going on around me. I recorded about 8 minutes of one particular exchange between Tim Tai and a number of those who were blocking him from entering the inner circle of concerned student. That lasted until Tim Tai was physically pushed away and I found myself on the inside of the inner circle. From there, I saw the person I wanted to talk to because I had seen her in particular strong-arming the media. That person was Melissa Click. And when I asked her for her take on this, she assaulted me. She grabbed my camera. And then she called for those around her to remove me. She called for muscle. Late that night, I actually filed a police report through campus police. And that was partially in response to those who had threatened to call the police on me. So I wanted to get my story in while I still could. Her calling for muscle was interpreted by me as an actual threat, and I felt, especially with MU football being involved in this protest, that there was a decent chance that it could escalate a lot further than any of us wanted it to. So that was a major part of the assault charge, was that she had called for muscle and that I felt a legitimate threat. And so campus police drew up the report and they sent it on to the city prosecutor. City prosecutor thought about it for a little while. He discussed it with me. And I received the call Monday that the city prosecutor had in fact decided to press charges against Melissa Click. The charges will be for third degree assault. The same day, the chancellor of the university, Hank Foley, finally addressed the situation, apologized to Tim Tai and I. And I'm upset that it took all of this for the university to respond. I'm upset that the city prosecutor was faster to act on this than the university, despite repeated calls from the student body, from the legislature, from all number of folks around the nation who weighed in on this. And the university was last. So that's a little disappointing. Melissa Click's status through the university is apparently unaffected by all of this. Her tenure review period will carry on as before, and the university is not planning to take any action against her before her tenure review period is up, which ends in August. I'm upset that it took a criminal charge for the university to react to Melissa Click's actions that day. The university never really responded to demands from the students for a full explanation of what happened that day, and seeing as much as I have so far, that's really as much as I expected.
I'd like to thank Mark for taking the time to leave those comments for us. We greatly appreciate it. Anytime you can hear from someone who's making the news that we're reporting here on the podcast, I think that's pretty cool. You're hearing it straight from the newsmaker himself. Now, Missouri lawmakers feel that these charges against Click bolster their point that she should be fired, with one of them, Justin Alferman, taking to Twitter saying, quote, "Melissa Click charged with assault. Your move, Chancellor/Board of Curators, it's already past due. I'm starting to think that being a Mizzou professor has the best job security in our state. You may literally do anything and keep your job." End quote. Now, if Click is found guilty of this Class C misdemeanor charge, she could face up to 15 days in jail and or a $300 fine. In a poll we ran on Petapixel.com earlier this month, over 1,400 people weighed in on this, and more than 85% of them believe that Click should be fired. You know, she should have been gone within a day or two of this incident. Keeping her around this long, in my opinion, just makes that university look bad. They're going to see that in time. Stay tuned. Of course, when she gets fired, and I believe that's coming, we'll let you know here on the show. There's nothing that irks some professional photographers more than other photographers giving away their images and helping to devalue photography. So when a story broke about 22-year-old photographer Gage Skidmore releasing images to be used under a Creative Commons license, the internets, that's right, the internets, were abuzz. The Arizona State University accounting student has captured and published tens of thousands of photographs of virtually every major U.S. presidential candidate over the past few years on the campaign trail, posting many of those to his Flickr page. His photos have been used by literally thousands of outlets and publications, including major media, blogs, and the politicians themselves. In fact, as I record this, the main image on Donald Trump's website was shot by this photographer. Skidmore tells us at Petapixel that he got his start in photography back in March 2009 when he bought his first DSLR, a Canon Rebel XSI. He later replaced that camera with a Canon 50D and then the awesome Canon 5D Mark II. He's clearly a Canon guy, right? No doubt about it. When politician Ron Paul's son Rand Paul made a senatorial bid back in 2009, Skidmore began attending campaign events there in Kentucky where he was going to high school, and he fell in love with photographing politicians. After graduating high school in 2010, Skidmore took a year off and began traveling around the country covering Ron Paul's 2012 presidential campaign. While on the campaign trail, he took the opportunity, of course, to photograph the other Republican candidates as well, and over time, he built up quite a library of images. Right now, he's traveling around the country covering Rand Paul's latest presidential campaign, further adding to his library and honing his skills. And he's quite good, I must say. The photos that he posts are published under a Creative Commons license, which allows for anyone to use his images so long as credit is given, and many have taken advantage of that, of course. He tells us at Petapixel, quote, "Creative Commons, in my mind, is a vehicle for my photos to be easily disseminated, and at first was a way to simply get my name out there. The photography industry is rapidly changing. I'd equate it slightly to Uber and Lyft for taxis. AP and Getty will likely always be the source that established news organizations such as CNN or the Wall Street Journal will utilize, but smaller websites or blogs, sites that are more than likely not going to pay images to begin with. I'd prefer it that they use my photos and give me attribution instead." End quote. And it's that thinking that's made his images some of the most used, most seen images of the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign. He says that he doesn't intend on doing photography for a living upon graduating from Arizona State and will likely enter the business world in some manner, saying, quote, "I may continue to do freelance photography on the side, but who knows what opportunities will present themselves, whether they are photography related or not," end quote. And hey, like it or not, that's his right. If you're a professional photographer and you're tired of photography being given away, this is definitely annoying to you though. And as you might imagine, people had a lot to say about this online. Petapixel user Michael O'Neill said this, quote, "Wow, this is a totally awesome trend that's going to make it impossible for professionals to make a living. Way to go, kid. While you're enjoying all that free exposure, try not to think about all the people who need to pay their mortgage and feed their kids." End quote. Wow, Michael was a little ticked off there. But hey, if he's a professional photographer, he's got skin in the game, right? Now, I think it's important to note here that Skidmore has been hired and paid dozens of times by various organizations to cover their events. Like I said, he's a very good photographer, so a quantity of his photography is available for use with proper credit to him, but he has indeed been paid as well. He shot for the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry, ASU Center for Political Thought and Leadership, Reason Magazine, and much more. So I wanted to make that clear that he has indeed done paid work before. As I was putting this story together, I noticed a Facebook post by our friend David Duchemin, photographer and owner of Craft and Vision. You guys all know who he is, of course. He said something that I thought I'd share with you here because I really value David's insight. In that post, David said, quote, "Photographers get upset and jealous when a colleague sells a photograph for millions of dollars. They get angry when a photographer gives away his work for free. Jealous, blame, anger. All this wasted energy should be put into making better photographs, pursuing better business models. All this fear. If a 22-year-old giving away his work puts a hole in your boat, you had a crappy, outdated boat. Sorry, friends, but if your business in this changing world is merely the pushing of a button, this will wake you up. It should make you hungry to be better, to create what this kid does not, to work harder, to diversify. It's not fair. But we can whine about it and be petty about it, or we can ditch the entitlement and build a better boat, one that will weather the changing weather. It sucks, I get it, but our lousy and outdated business model created the vacuum into which guys like this arrive to fill a hole. We can whine, it'll make us feel better, but it will change precisely nothing." End quote. Okay, I changed the word David said to crappy since we need to maintain our clean rating here on the podcast, but you guys get the idea. I couldn't possibly agree with David more. He completely nailed it. Of course it sucks. It would be nice if everyone got paid for their photography, and that includes Gage Skidmore. But that ship has sailed. Boat? Ship? Okay, just go with me on this, okay? The business of photography has changed radically. If your business model is the same as it was back in the 90s, it's time to pivot. We live in a world with ever-present social media, a continuous stream of images bombarding us, and an instant news cycle. Those who fail to accept that reality and work within this reality are going to continue to be upset because guess what? Social media isn't going away. Things aren't going back to the good old days. I think what David said was really important. Now, David's got some other great posts over on his Facebook page, so make sure to look up David Duchemin, and that's Duchemin, on Facebook, and you can be part of this discussion. If you're looking to build an online portfolio website to show off your best images, Adobe Portfolio, launched on Monday, January 25th, 2016, seeks to help you make that happen. Its online editor is designed to help you get your website designed and up and running in just minutes. That's right, minutes. You start by picking a layout, which you could change later if you decide to. Then you make some style and design choices, choose your fonts, and you see these changes live as you make them. You know, that's the world we live in now, right? Everything seems to be WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. And that really helps a lot of people, the democratization of making websites. With Adobe Portfolio, you'll be creating a site that looks great on any computer or mobile device. You can sync to and from Behance. You can disable right-click saving of photos. There's custom domain name support, analytics, password-protected pages, and so much more. To get started, head on over to the Adobe Portfolio website at myportfolio.com, where you can have your own site for just $9.99 a month with a one-year commitment. Or, if you're an Adobe Creative Cloud subscriber, no additional charge, which is a good thing because I'm paying $50 a month myself for that darn thing. Adobe Portfolio reminds me a lot of Squarespace, except for it's more integrated with Adobe's ecosystem. So we'll see if this takes off or not. Many people aren't even using Behance or even know what Behance is. So time will tell. Here in America, chances are that you know who Keith Olbermann is, especially if you watch ESPN or you remember him from his old show back on MSNBC. I think it was MSNBC. Well, one thing that none of us had any idea about was that the broadcaster actually loved photography. I was recently watching a video of the awesome sports photographer Brad Mangin, who opened this show actually, and he was given a talk on the history of Major League Baseball photography when he mentioned something that really surprised me. And that was that a young Keith Olbermann had sold photos that ended up on baseball cards, something that many of us wish we had happen. But by Olbermann's own admission, they were quite horrible. Mangin said, quote, "Keith Olbermann, the television broadcaster, is a baseball freak. He actually used to be a photographer and shot really bad pictures for the first Donruss set of baseball cards in 1981. They're really bad," end quote. Now, Mangin wasn't being mean. Like I said, Olbermann himself thought they were horrible. In a tweet back in 2013, he said, quote, "RE Photography," that's regarding photography, "actually sold about 15 photos to Donruss for their initial baseball card set in 1981. Most were awful," end quote. In a letter written to Baseball Card Magazine back in 1991, he said that Donruss had asked him if he had a photo of Vern Rule of the Houston Astros. He did, but apparently his flash failed to fire, and thus the pitcher's eyes and most of his face were in deep shadows. Not ideal at all for a portrait, let alone one that people would be trading, right? Now imagine you're a baseball player and your card is kind of dodgy like that. I'm sure that would be mine. That'd be my luck. So Donruss reportedly said to him, "Is it better than our Charbonneau?" Olbermann replied, "Barely." So they told him, "Just send it anyway." He did just that, and the rest is history. And as a result, Rule's card is not at all ideal, but hopefully Upper Deck or Topps had him covered, huh? What happens when you set up a GoPro and aim it out your window during the biggest snowstorm the East Coast of the United States has seen in a long time? Well, what you get is a really cool video which shows just why having something like a GoPro is a good idea if you're an image maker. A Purcellville, Virginia man named Ryan did what many others have done in the past and shot his back patio during the storm. Something that we've all seen before. It's not original, but hey, no one's going out mounting a GoPro to a tree somewhere. But maybe they should, huh? You know, it's still pretty cool, though. It's amazing how an insane amount of snow piles up, and sped up, you really get a sense of just how much snow fell out of the sky. The video was picked up by ABC News and others, and if you'd like to see it, hit the show notes for episode 42 at petapixel.com/podcast. Back in episode 31, we told you about the world's first protective lens filters made of ceramic. Filters that Sigma claims are 10 times stronger than traditional filters and 3 times stronger than chemically strengthened filters. Well, the company has just published pricing and availability for the new filter, as well as a video which demonstrates its strength through a ball drop shatter test. They did a standard shatter test using a 49-gram metal ball, and as you may expect, Sigma's filter survived just fine. The traditional glass filter and 2 different chemically hardened filters, however, well, bad things happen to those. Of this, Sigma says, quote, "The test proved the excellent shock resistance of Sigma WR ceramic protector compared to the conventional protector," end quote. Now, they're resistant to water, scratches, and oil, and will be available in sizes ranging from 67 millimeters on up to 105 millimeters in diameter. The 67 millimeter filter goes for $130 US. Those of you with the popular 24-70 and 70-200mm f2.8 lenses are probably going to need the 77mm, which goes for $165, and the largest, a 105mm, costs as much as a lens, coming in at $441. Now, of course, there are others between those, but I just listed a few of them for you. Now, whether or not you even need a protective filter, though, is up for debate. In fact, people get all worked up about this in the forums. You know, rather than actually shooting photos, they lose their minds talking about whether or not you need one of these and saying things that they would never say to your face. I call these people theoretical photographers. They're not actually doing any photography, so we generally ignore them. Now, personally, I don't use them. Asterisk, for the most part. As my good friend Sony artisan Paul Giroux reminded me after an old episode, there are circumstances where a protective filter comes in handy, such as shooting at the beach where there's sand and spray, etc. Paul does a healthy amount of shooting portrait sessions and weddings on the beach in California, so he would definitely know. Now, in the past, as a photojournalist, I've used them while shooting forest fires and other assignments where debris was likely to be in the air. But if you're wanting to protect your lens, for the most part, what you really want is a lens hood. It'll not only protect that front element in the vast majority of cases, it'll also keep out extraneous light. And a lens filter is not going to do that. In fact, it can actually introduce lens flare into your photos, reduce contrast, and more. But the choice is up to you. Now, if you're interested in one of these filters, remember to get one that fits the largest filter thread size that you have, or maybe that you plan on having someday. You can always get step-down rings to adapt these to smaller filter threads for your other lenses. And don't forget to shop around, because the prices published by Sigma are quite a bit more than you're going to find at retail outlets such as B&H. As photographers, you know, sometimes carrying around thousands of dollars in gear and often unaware of our surroundings, we make excellent targets, unfortunately. It's sad, but true. And you know what? No one is expecting to be victimized. Now, throw in shooting in a sketchy environment or a place where your camera may be the equivalent of a few months' income, and the chances of your gear being separated from you goes up significantly. And that's what happened to Dutch photojournalist Toon Vooten and Mikey Engels. And yes, I likely botched those two names, but I'm not Dutch, so I don't know. They were shooting at a migrant camp in Calais, France earlier this month in January 2016, and they were mugged by 3 refugees at that camp that were armed with pepper spray and a knife. Thankfully, though, other migrants in the camp came to their rescue and the men fled. This was all caught on video by Engels as the duo was shooting their new independent film, Calais, Welcome to the Jungle, which aims to bring awareness to the living conditions inside the camp, which is currently housing some 4,000 people and is often referred to as the jungle. The assailants descended on the photojournalist in an attempt to steal his expensive DSLR, and then they turned their attention to Engels, who defended herself by kicking at them. The journalist posted the video to YouTube, where it's been viewed nearly 700,000 times as I record this, and has become quite controversial. Some have used this video to push an anti-immigration message, while pro-immigration supporters criticized Engels for putting it online. They tell The Local, quote, "We put it online because it's a perfect representation of refugees in general. You have good refugees and bad refugees. The bad ones were robbing us while the good ones were rescuing us. We have provided enough context. We have huge problems with self-censorship and disagree with withholding information from the public for fear they are not mature enough to handle it," end quote. Now, if you want to see the video, of course, hit the show notes for episode 42 at petapixel.com/podcast. Back in episode 40, we talked about how Fujifilm revealed that it was researching and testing medium format sensors and seemed to think that it would be pretty successful if they got back into the medium format camera business, since they have the expertise to do all that. Well, despite the company saying that it is, quote, not planning to launch a medium format camera, end quote, a new report is out that contradicts that. According to Fuji rumors, it got information directly from a, quote, top trusted Japanese source, end quote, that a digital medium format Fujifilm camera has already been given the green light and is already actively being developed. Of this, Fuji rumors says, quote, yep, the medium format Fuji will come. And if priced somewhere between the Pentax 645D, about $3,400 US, and the Pentax 645Z, about $7,000 US, this camera could be a real winner for Fujifilm, end quote. So as I said in that episode, it's pretty obvious that a medium format Fujifilm camera system is being developed. We may not see it until 2017, but who knows? Given this information, assuming their source is solid, I'm moving up my estimate to sometime in the summer of 2016. That's not too long away, and I think they've had this thing going for a while now. They're just prepping us for it. Whenever it comes out, expect to pay quite a bit of money because a body and a lens could easily be upwards of $10,000 US. But if you have that kind of money and you do a lot of landscapes and or portraits, you may want to check out the upcoming Fujifilm medium format system because it seems a lot more like it's actually going to happen now. And that's pretty cool. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 42 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 43. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.